This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I've started the recording, but don't tell Albert. Try and get something incriminating said.
Hi.
Hi, what drink did you get?
I got a beer. One would have sufficed if we'd have started on time, but we've... We crept over, so I need another one.
You need another one?
Yeah.
Is there any times in your life that you've been into more than one in one night?
What? Cracking one off?
I'm not talking about hitting a wall. I'm talking about, like, you know, you've got a bird there, and then you've gone out on the, you've gone out with your mates later that night, and then you've pulled someone else.
No, never
done that.
Long-term lover.
All right. What's the most number of you've had in one night, then?
Two.
Come on. Really?
No. Never done it.
For someone whose catchphrase is me off.
Yes, I get other people to do it.
Oh.
Homesdale Radio Preview Podcast, sponsored by fanduel.co.uk, the next generation of fantasy football.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Homesdale Radio Preview Podcast. I'm your host, Terence Ford of redandbluearmy.co.uk, and I'm here, along with Albert Curley and Nick Philpott, to build you up to our upcoming match against Southampton. We'll likely need more than just the appearance of Saints at Selhurst Park to save our season the way things are going. Joining us at various points in the show will be Southampton fan and editor of Shoot Annual, Jack Rosser, and former Crystal Palace, Leicester, Ipswich and Coventry striker, James Scowcroft, who will discuss our classic match versus Southampton. Before we get into all of that, remember to subscribe to both of our podcasts by visiting holradio.net/subscribe. I considered jumping off the Severn Bridge on my way back from Swansea on the weekend, but a Pizza Hut, a cider, and my mate not shutting up about how he won £3,600 on the game kept me sane and means that I'm back to lead you like lambs to the slaughter into our weekend's fixture against Southampton. I have two excellent Homesdale Radio panellists this week. Firstly, Nick Philpott. Welcome, mate.
Yo, Terence. How are you, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. Not too bad.
You're off to India this week, right?
I'm going to India on Sunday. Business class, I hasten to add. Long single bed, all mod cons in there. Going business class.
It doesn't stop you from getting deli belly, mate.
I know.
I'm also joined by Albert Curley. Welcome.
Hello, mate.
Have you calmed down yet? You've been very angry in our group chat this week since the Swansea defeat.
Well, let's put it this way. Even winning $3,500 probably would only have taken the littlest of edges off it. So,
yeah, tell us about the $3,600, Sal.
Well, he was he does all this sort of in play betting stuff on the Betfair Exchange, and when Palace took the lead, he bet on Swansea to win. When Swansea took the lead, he bet on Palace to win, and back and forth. And it was just slowly, so he got to the position where no matter what the result was, at some point he was going to win a lot of money. But he ended up cashing out at the end for £3,600. The bastard.
Fair play, though.
Yeah, he put on $4,000.
So that's £3,600 profit.
Oosh.
So I think he did all of that with about £70, which is
pretty good going. And he bought me Pizza Hut, so that's all right.
He's all heart then. Yeah, I can say he's all heart, aren't he?
Not even a salad buffet as well.
We were walking down the street, so the lonely journey down the hill back from the Liberty Stadium down to Swansea Station for what was the worst 3.5 hour train journey of my life. It was horrible. It picks up loads of rugby fans at Cardiff. It was just horrendous. So hopefully that won't happen.
You could have just walked into Pizza Hut, thrown down like 50 quid, picked up the whole bowl of bacon bits and just walked out. Whatever. Make it rain
bacon bits.
You know that.
Right, look, both of you guys have been on the show before, so we won't do the regular introduction to you guys. What we will do is, on the back of the 5-4 defeat of Swansea, Albert, what's the worst Palace match you've ever attended?
You asked me this today, and I had to really think about it, because there's some obvious ones. You know, there's the FA Cup final and other games that have gone so well. But the one for me that really, really wound me up at the time was the second leg playoff semi-final against Bristol.
You have to differentiate between the two. My best mate's a Bristol Rovers fan, and if you say Bristol, he loses his and he listens to this, so
doesn't lose his gas.
You've redeemed yourself a little bit there.
Yeah, that, I mean, it was a midweek. We were lucky to be in it, you know, well, be within it after the first leg. I thought we were lucky to get into it during the game, and then to go to extra time and have two of my all-time most hated players, being Lee Trundle and Michael the Fraud McIndoe, and seal it with two long ranges. Particularly the Lee Trundle celebration, I can still picture that. And it was me and my brother, and we were right in the front row. In fact, we were right next to the post that Ben Watson thumped. So that was pretty miserable. That stood out.
Can you still remember the sound of the post being hit when you close your eyes?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, my spine shudders, like the post did that night.
I think Neil Warnock said after, whenever he sees Ben Watson scoring a penalty now, he always just like, ugh. I saw Lee Trundle at Swansea on the weekend. He was outside the ground taking pictures. So I wish I got one now and I could have sent it to you.
He was taking pictures. Is that how he's fallen?
That's all he does now.
No, he's an ambassador.
Picture.
No, he's an ambassador for the club, so he was doing some stuff in that. But he's playing for Lefnelly Town at the moment, I think they're called, which are kind of like a low-league Welsh outfit, and he scored 20 goals in his first 8 games for them. So clearly found his level. And what about you, Nick? What's the worst Palace match you've attended?
That wasn't the question, by the way. Your question this afternoon wasn't what was the worst Palace match. What was your lowest moment is what you said, okay?
You can take the question how you want, but that was just me saying,
well, I'll give you the date.
You in the direction I wanted.
I'll give you the date, okay? 12th of September, 1989. Any ideas?
Well, it's the 9-0 against Liverpool, obviously.
Obviously, but I wasn't there, okay? I was actually on holiday with my family, my children, loads of friends. It ruined my holiday.
Oh, there we go. Swearing already.
I'm sorry.
And our producer is going to have to edit this show after, so I'm having to take notes every time you... Oh, I shouldn't have told you that. You guys are just going to carry on doing it to me now, aren't you?
I wouldn't fucking do that to you.
Oh my goodness.
As if we do that.
Go on, carry on.
And it ruined our holiday, as you can imagine, and it was my lowest ever point. I mean, we've been through some times, let's be honest, as Palace fans, but that has to be the lowest that I was ever at. Do you know, I never ever thought about changing allegiances, because you just wouldn't do it if you're a proper football fan. But I wondered if that would have been my last ever game or my last ever season at Selhurst. Unfortunately, after last weekend, it wasn't. I've continued supporting them, and I wish I had.
No, you don't mean that. You know, you love Palace. I had quite a long, hard think, and there's been various ones here and there, but one that always stands out, and I think a lot of it is to do with me being at being sat in the home end. We were away at Millwall on New Year's Day, and a certain Jason Puncheon scored a hat-trick. And it just felt like the world was coming crashing down around Crystal Palace. It was horrible. You know, we were struggling under Burley. We looked like we were going down. I know it should have been all good spirits at that time, because the club had just been saved and so on, but it just felt like, oh, it's just all been a bit of a false dawn and it's all going to go wrong. And I remember feeling really, really low that day, and especially getting home, writing my match report for the game, and then just as I was about to post it online, Birdie got sacked, so I had to delete it and start all over again.
I remember that game. I actually watched that game on YouTube the other night, actually. It's you're right.
What's wrong with you?
Send shivers down your spine, isn't it? So one of our own doing that. I am. It's either that or go back to one of my normal channels that I go to.
Well, good. Thanks for sharing that, guys. We'll get into a little bit more up to date now. So we talked about it on the pod last week, but Zaha has now officially chosen to join the Ivory Coast. It has been reported today that he might not go to the Africa Cup of Nations in this January to stay behind and help us. Let me get your two guys' opinions on this. Nick, that is your name.
Yeah.
I'm old. I'm like you. I'm gone senile there.
Absolutely the best of us, mate. My thoughts on Wilf. When I first saw it announced earlier in the week, I actually had a thought process on it. Is this some sort of a ruse? Is this some sort of a hurry up to Southgate and the FA? Are they doing this to get? Because in the press this evening, I saw something on Twitter earlier. What the hell have you done, English FA? What the hell have you done, Southgate? If he does go to the African Cup of Nations, if he does play for them, good luck to him, because let's face it, he's been our best outstanding player all season. He deserves international recognition for sure. And I wish him nothing but the best. But I think it's a complete and utter screw up by the English FA.
Yeah, what about you, Albert?
I think if I was any more positive about England, or I took a wider interest in the England squad, I'd probably be a bit gutted and think, we as a nation have lost out. But when you're sort of a bit over the England situation, it's easier to sort of stay a bit calmer about it. I think it's good for him. I think, he's good enough to play international football. He deserves to play on a bigger stage. And if that's with the Ivory Coast, then good for him. It is a shame that he's not got recognition in the country that he's lived in for, most of his life. And, I imagine that would be his first choice. But it's just another glaring, neon sign around the incompetence that is the England setup.
Yeah, it certainly is. I think he's just obviously taken a step back. He's obviously got influences in the background there, and it'll go to the next World Cup if that's the case as a guarantee, which he won't do with England potentially. And
yeah, exactly.
I know I spoke a lot about last week, and I think it's just boring of England, especially, to just want to stick with the samey, but it's England's loss, it's Ivory Coast's gain, and hopefully it will allow Zaha to become a better player, hopefully, in red and blue still. Connor Wickham has been announced that he's got to have surgery today, and if it's a clean tear of his anterior ACL, then he's in trouble. That's about 9 months out. We talked about him potentially starting last week on the podcast, and he did indeed at Swansea, and it's a shame for him. I think it's the second time in his Palace career where he's finally started getting going, scoring goals, and he's got injured again. Do you think it's going to be a big miss, Nick?
It's going to be huge. If you think about the what I've been calling for weeks on both the pod and the main show, a 4-4-2 setup, which you told me I'm too old to worry about that. We finally started with a 4-4-2 on Saturday, or a 4-4-2-ish. I don't think he had a bad game. In fact, I think he had quite a good game. I'm distraught for the fella. He's been on social media himself tonight. He's very positive. He said that he's going to come back stronger and everything else. I just hope he's right, and I hope it's not worse than first feared. I mean, I think it would have come out in the press already if it was a real bad one. Maybe it's just a minor tweak or something that he needs an exploratory operation on. God hoping anyway. Good luck to the fella.
No, if you ever walk down the tunnel at Selhurst Park?
Yeah.
It's really low, right? Could you imagine this Southampton game? Christian Benteke is running down, giving himself a bit of a concussion, banging his head instead of ducking on the way out. And we've got Fraser Campbell up front, Albert. How would you feel about that?
I would feel cold, probably dead inside, suicidal. Nothing good. Yeah, it's a big miss, isn't it? It's there's a lot of question marks over him last season when he was the focal point. I think the fact that there's some other names to take the heat off him this season, and, you know, it's the classic super sub, and then, you know, getting a start like he did on Saturday, it looked like it was sort of coming together for him. And yeah, it's a real shame because, you know, we're all talking about Remy, or when's Remy back, and then it turns out he's injured again, and, you know, you don't miss what you've never had, but, you know, we need him to come back and then hope that he fits in and it all goes well, really. That's
that man who's hardly kicked the ball for probably about a season now.
I don't think he knows what football is anymore. But, so, yeah, I think it puts a whole new spin on what we do in January, to be honest, because obviously the back line is where we're crying out for some quality and depth, and you could argue middle of the park as well. But if we're going to be relying on Benteke staying fit, who could easily suffer the same fate, and let's assume Remy's not fit, Connor Wickham's not fit, like you say, you're left with the big FC, and that ain't good. Rather the big FA.
Well, one of the big misses, I think, is going to be, especially at the moment, you highlight the defensive problems there, is that he's done really well from corners in a defensive manner. He was doing a very good job at Swansea until he unfortunately went off, and then we started conceding left, right and centre from crosses into the box. Final thing we'll touch on before we get into talking about the game. Did you see Steve Mandanda's comments that he made on French TV, Nick?
Yeah, I did. And if they are translated correctly and he is opening the door for departure, I've got a feeling on this. The club needs a lift. The club needs a massive lift at the moment. If he's still injured and he's not playing this weekend, and even if he isn't injured, I would bench him. I would actually probably drop him from the squad. And what this club would do with a massive lift at home on Saturday, can you imagine if they got Spironi to start?
I was going to say, if they got me to start there.
No, or me, mate. Hennessy has done okay. He hasn't disgraced himself, I suppose you could argue. Apart from the free kick, okay, the usual one-step free kick job. But, I mean, the one thing that would do the club a massive lift is bring Spironi in for a game and give him that record. The place would be rocking on Saturday if he did.
What do you think, Albert? I'm of the opinion that Mandanda can foxtrot Oscar if that's the way he wants to behave already, because if he's another player that doesn't want to know when the going gets tough, I'm not sure if I want him at the club. Do you have a similar vein, or do you want to keep hold of him?
I certainly subscribe to that way of thinking in general. I mean, I've only read, you know, printed quotes of what he's reportedly said. I don't know if there's video evidence of it that someone's, you know, translated word for word. If what he said is true and that's how it's intended, yeah, obviously it's not good. But again, you take away Steve Mandanda, Hennessy's going to be the number one, isn't he? You know, Spironi's not going to come in. No way. You know, he's the last great pillar of, you know, sort of our modern sort of legends, if you will. And I don't think Pardew's going to allow him back in. it's a tough one. I'd like to think he's been misquoted. I'm happy to give him benefit of the doubt in the meantime.
Every picture tells a story.
Keep up to date with ours on Instagram
at Homesdale Radio.
Right, okay, guys, before we move on actually to talking about the game, we'll touch on Tony Pulis. Albert, you're a particular fan of Pulis, so talk me through it. What's happened?
Massive. Well, as per the aforementioned Michael Makindo. straight up mother fraud, yo.
Oh goodness.
It's outrageous. There's the sort of official court notes. I don't know what the proper term is going around. And they're very wordy. There's lots of legal jargon in there, but some of the selected quotes and accounts of what was said, it makes it very interesting and very damning reading if you're Tony Pulis or a Tony Pulis fan, which I know there are some out there, at least two or three. The best bit is I like to say he called Barry Bonan, Stuart O'Keefe and Alex Price as witnesses.
Lewis Price.
Yeah, Alex Price. He wasn't available.
The price is wrong.
yeah, it was. He got the date wrong of the heated players meeting.
August the 12th.
Indeed. Which they've...
It was August the 8th, mate, not August the 12th.
Barry Bonan.
August 12th is what Pulis was peddling. Yeah, he's liars.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
So the HPM was on the 8th, and Pulis, he sent it on the 12th, and he'd already wangled his bonus by this point. Bonus, I said there.
To buy land for his children.
Which sounds like a really like 18th century. Like, he did buy land for my children. Like, really sort of, it's almost like something like Game of Thrones. Not that I've ever seen it. Apparently there's loads of tits. Sounds awesome. I just found it really interesting. I put it on Twitter today. It was on the BBC homepage and it was on the Guardian. There's an article on the Guardian about it. But it seems to have not drawn much heat, which... You know, bearing in mind the Premier League's the most, you know, overexposed football league in the history of the world ever, you'd think there'd be a bigger deal about it, especially in light of the Telegraph investigation earlier this year. But maybe that's just me. I haven't picked up enough newspapers.
Terence, I've got a question for you. You always ask the questions. Your employer has just found out that in a court of law, you've just been called a defrauding cheat, okay, and a liar, okay, and you're employing that guy. What would you do?
Cool, I thought about teaming me up into a massive run. Look, I get sacked, basically. That's what happens here. But obviously, West Brom were complicit in what he was doing because West Brom wanted him. It's basically been proven that they waited the right amount of time, so West Brom didn't have to pay any compensation to Crystal Palace, and that's been part of this ruling and why the figure's more than the bonus that is more than just the bonus that Pulis was paid early. And yeah, but it just shows that it's success over morals in football. I suppose in a way it always has been, but now, you know, there's very large sums of money involved. You know, back in the day when players were earning, you know, not much more money than the regular working person was earning to play football or manage football teams, it's a little bit of a different story. You can understand why these people might have wanted to line their pockets, because at the end of the day, it's a short career. And this sort of behaviour now is extended in. Tony Pulis does not need an extra £3.5 million. You know, like, the man is earning enough money through his footballing career to lead a very, very comfortable life after he retires. And so that's what makes it a lot more wrong now, I think. I mean, morally, I think it's still wrong whenever you're defrauding people anyway, in any fashion. But
definitely,
you know, at the moment, you know, he doesn't need this extra £3.5 million. But the fact that the FA should be issuing some sort of ban, as far as I'm concerned, I can't believe he's going to be able to continue to be in positions where he can continue to commit this kind of fraud, whether it's through player sales or, you know, initiating a move away from West Brom at some point. He should be banned. West Brom should be having to sack him, as any other brand in any part of the world would do. You know, it shouldn't just be right because it's in football. The man should be sacked and never allowed to work in the field again. But the fact is, he's successful, and people will perceive success, I guess, because all he does is keep you in the division and get you a mid-lower table finish, which isn't success, is it? But, you know, the brands are going to stay for this because morally they don't care, as long as the hundreds of millions of pounds are rolling in. So that's my thoughts on Anthony Richard Pulis. So his middle name's Dick. So
yeah, it is. So that rant went very well. Thanks for that. So the figures being bandied around are anything from 3.7 million up to 6 million quid. What would you do with that money? Well, there's only one answer, isn't there?
I'd buy land for my kids.
Obviously, that is.
Well, you
the
say that, Terence. He should be allowed to work in the field again. But if he did get the money and did buy that land, maybe he would be working in a field. Maybe he wants to get into something agricultural.
Okay, moving on. Let's talk about the Southampton game. That's what we're here to do. Right, is this going to be Pardew's version of Warnock's Southampton? What do you reckon, Nick? Do you remember that was when Neil Warnock's last game was that? Oh, he substituted Yannick Bolasie when we were 3-0 down and replaced him in Martin Kelly and got a chorus of "you don't know what you're doing" from the whole of the Palace.
At least he didn't put him at left back.
I think he did.
The answer to your question is, I mean, I'm mightily surprised he's even got the Southampton and Hull game, because that's, but from reading accounts, that's exactly what he's got. The bottom line is, if we go behind on Saturday, the stadium is going to turn against him, and I predict a riot. Honestly,
indeed.
And I think that's where it'll go.
Quite catchy, that.
I think it will go off on Saturday. If we go 1 or 2 nil down, which I will be predicting that we will do, I think it's going to go off on Saturday. And come 6 o'clock Saturday night, he won't get the whole game. He'll just get the Southampton game, and that'll be it. And we'd be using that £3.7 million to pay him off.
Yeah, a lot of people have been making that link. Albert, you'd be snapping up your season card and throwing it in?
Well, no, because I share my season ticket with my dad's mate. So, I know this is going to sound awful, but is there a little bit of you that does want to like go 2-0 down quite early on? Just to see what happens.
Didn't we get this problem though with Brexit? Didn't David Cameron go, let's just see what happens?
Let's just see what Brexit means. Brexit and Pardew means Pardew also.
Pardew means exit.
Yeah, very good. Listen, obviously I want to go on Saturday and I want us to win, and I want us to win by five goals to nil, and you know, play out of our skins and have a really good performance. But it's not even after the weekend, is it? It's after this year. I just don't see a way back. I don't see what he can do to change it. We've lost one of our only attacking options in Connor Wickham. I just can't see anything positive coming out of the weekend. Whether that ends in a riot or a sacking, I don't know. But I don't think it's going to be pretty. And I've got my Christmas party on Friday, so I'm going to be in a bit of the blues anyway. So I'm sort of looking forward to it in a weird way.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm intrigued to see what the Home Cell fanatics are going to do, because with Ian Holloway's time and Neil Warnock's time, when it was over, they withdrew their support for a small period of time, but you know, just sending that message that we're not behind him anymore. But you know, they've been very, very pro Pardew in the time because of his links with the clubs and so on. So I'm very intrigued to see what will happen on Saturday. Hopefully it won't be any worries and we'll be going 3-0 up or something like that, but like I said, I can't see it.
And then 4-3 down.
Yeah. but you're right, and if we do go 3-0 up, for example, and hold on to the game and win the game, and it's all great, great performance and everything, it's probably only papering over the cracks, as I think it's all a little bit too deep-seated now than actually just being, you know, a couple of good performances will turn it around. I think the rift's a lot deeper than we know. So Pardew hinted after the Swansea game that there was going to be wholesale changes. What sort of wholesale changes are we talking, Nick? Do you think a really big shift in formation or personnel? What do you think he's going to do?
A little bit on the formation. I think he'll bring Friars in for this one and give old Kelly a bit of a rest. But what it will do is, because of the loss of Wickham, I think it'll give us an opportunity to play MacArthur, Punchin, Zaha and Benteke up front, and bring Joe Ledley in as well.
Well, Kabay is suspended, isn't he? He picked up his fifth yellow card.
Which is why, obviously, Ledley... Is Ledley fit?
Because I haven't... He was on the bench at the Swansea.
He's well fit.
he'll come in for Kabay. And I think that will probably be the lineup. But I'm sure he'll bring in Friars. He's not stupid. Well, he is stupid, but he's... He must have read all the message boards, heard all the things about the left-back scenario. He must be aware of it. And I think this is his opportunity to say, OK, then you think you know best, let's bring him in and see how we go.
Yeah,
because if we don't, Southampton they know we've got a weakness in Kelly, and they will get at him. Make no mistake, they will get to him.
Yeah, part of me has got to the stage, I'm wondering if Pardew just really hates Martin Kelly personally, and that's why he's just leaving him out there to rot. Because I think a lot of the feeling around in the crowd at the Swansea game was people are not, they're not pissed off at Martin Kelly, like for his bad performances. They're pissed off that he's been continued to be put into the wrong, like he's not his natural position over and over again when he's clearly failing at it. That's what people's main problem is. And that's, again, why a lot of people are pointing the fingers at Pardew, because he's clearly just not up for it at Premier League level playing left back. So why would you continuously leave him out there? Now, it's either, like I said, does he hate Martin Kelly, or is it because Zeki Frye simply isn't good enough and he knows that, and that's why he can't play him, because he thinks it'll be worse? But can it get any worse than Martin Kelly at the moment, Matt? I mean, Albert, sorry. Shh, don't tell anyone I said that.
Who are you talking about? can it get worse? It can always get worse, but it can't get much worse at the moment. You know, Nick's already alluded to the fact that, and you've already alluded to the fact that there's going to be wholesale changes. Now, I'm thinking maybe there'll be some marking at corners, maybe some communication in the back line.
Really?
Maybe a man on the post every now and then. I don't know. Who knows? But in all seriousness, you look at the squad, what wholesale changes can we make, really? You know, you can go, oh, we'll stick the kids in. We don't, you know, we have Sully Kaikai's not even at the club. He's not going to get chucked in.
Luke Trey has just got injured.
You know, the wholesale change, and I really hate to make a point of him, but like, a wholesale change is, well, you don't play Benteke and you play Fraser Campbell. You know, that's the sort of depth or lack of in our squad at the moment. So I really don't know what to expect. You know, I want to say in Pardew's defence, but, you know, he is sort of, you know, ultimately responsible for the composition of the squad. In his defence, he hasn't got a lot of other options, really, is he?
His defence, he hasn't got a defence.
In his defence, he doesn't care about defending. So, I don't know. It's all up in the air for me. So, who knows?
Well, I think what was very clear on during the Swansea game is the lack of physicality for us in the centre of the park. You know, MacArthur and Kabay are both little terriers in there, but they don't have much presence in the air in the defending sense. And I compared the clearances made by Swansea's centre two versus Kabay and MacArthur in the game against Swansea, and Kabay and MacArthur combined for one clearance in that game, where Leroy Fer and Jay Fulton combined for 8 clearances, which shows the sort of work that they were doing, helping out from set pieces back in their own penalty area, and the lack of work that Kabay and MacArthur are doing. And I just feel like by default, they should be clearing more than one time when the amount of balls went into the box as did in the Swansea game. So part of me thinks that Jordan Much might start to get a look in, basically because of he's extra added height in the middle of the park, and you know that I'm not a big fan of Jordan Much, but he has talked wholesale changes. I wonder if there's going to be an element of going to 3 at the back, maybe, because you can get Damien Delaney in there, which... If he wakes up, indeed. Because you don't ever see that clip for any extended period of time. He might have just had his eyes closed. He might not have actually been asleep.
I think he was asleep. I think that's just, you know, it's a convenient sort of headline to write, isn't it?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Three at the back would be bold, don't tell.
Yeah, I know we've talked about whether we've actually got the players to do it, but I'm just more talking about what are you going to do here to defend set pieces? It's our weakness. We're really, really struggling there. And we need some extra height in that box to deal with these things. And it's just, he's the one who said wholesale changes, and he looked like he meant it for once. You know, after that match, in that post-match press conference, all the way through this bad run, all the way through this year, I've never seen him in that position, in that state. Like, he's always had a little bit of a cheeky grin to one of the answers or something. There's always some sort of, you know, Pardew big swinging dick in there. In that post-match interview, there was nothing. He looked like a shell of a man. He looks angry. He looks sad. And
there's a reason. There's a reason for it. He's got a rope net around his neck and it's getting tighter and tighter and tighter and he knows it.
But yeah, so it's finally for him, I think the penny's dropped where your friendship with Steve Parrish isn't going to help you out anymore. It's the end is drawing in. Right, we'll end it there. And next up, we're going to talk to our man that supports Southampton. And he's also the editor of everyone's favourite childhood magazine, Shoot. We all read that as a kid, right?
A long time ago. It was in black and white. It was black and white and I read it.
I didn't read Shoot, but I did tend to shoot over other magazines.
Oh my God. Anyway, look, that man is Jack Rosser and he will be up after this short interlude.
Homesdale Radio Preview Podcast, sponsored by fanduel.co.uk.
The next generation of fantasy football.
Yes, so we are now joined by Jack Rosser. Jack, thank you for joining us, mate.
No worries, pleasure to be on.
So, having a little stalk on your Twitter profile, what is it that you're doing with Shoot magazine?
So, I'm on the editorial team of Shoot.
That's pretty cool. And we were talking about, we all read that as a kid. Does it still get produced in magazine format?
No, so it's all online now, and there's just the annual once a year. So, we're putting out daily content, news and features.
Very nice. Right, so Southampton, you've hit the reset button again at the start of the season, as you seem to like to do every year. What's your secret to being able to just freshen it up so much every time?
I think it's sort of, you know, beyond most Saints fans to explain it, really. We praise our recruitment and things like that. They've always got, you know, two or three replacements for every position sort of lined up, whether that be a player or a member of staff. So we always know what we want, but the fact that it's gone so well, you know, each time so far, is I suppose a bit of luck as well.
And so you got your new manager in. Is it Claude Puel? Am I saying that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Be honest. Had you heard of him before you got him in?
I hadn't. No.
Me neither. I feel like that with a lot of Premier League managers at the moment. What's he doing differently to what Ronald Koeman was doing?
Well, he changed. He had a big shake up with the sort of way the system we used at the start of the season in terms of formation. We still, you know, very much like look to play attacking football, quite quick pace. But it was just the way in which we used the midfield and things like that. But he showed a lot more, which I think showed at the weekend with Josh Sims. He showed a lot more faith in the youth system than Koeman did. He was often criticised for sort of ignoring it, and he was pulled up in the press conference after the game this week, which, you know, he didn't really like being sort of held against his own comments when he was Saints manager. So yeah, he's shown a lot of faith in the youth system, and so far this season it's paid off with, you know, the likes of Josh Sims and Sam McQueen making their debuts and doing really well.
Yeah, I think it's really important, especially for English football, that people are coming in and giving youth players a chance. You've got the same's happening at Spurs at the moment as well. So it can only mean good things for the national team going forward. Is there a little bit of you?
Yeah.
Is there a little bit of you in this enjoying Koeman's rocky start at Everton?
Oh, definitely. There's quite a large bit of me that's enjoying it. It's, you know, you always like to sort of take the perspective of, you know, you can understand why a player has made a big, you know, when we lost all our players to Liverpool and United and teams like that, you can understand why they're going, you know, because it is Liverpool and it is Man United. It was a bit of a kick in the teeth when Koeman, you know, made all these statements about, you know, I don't get drawn by money or things like that. And then disappeared with a year left on his contract to Everton, whatever has gone on with him and the board, maybe changes it, but, you know, nobody's sure of that. So no, it's definitely quite nice to watch.
Yeah, I mean,
you beat them at the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, we was obviously there at your place on the last game of last season and getting into the Europa League and the whole spirit around the stadium, everything just seemed like everyone was pulling in the right direction. So I was a little bit shocked to see it happen. So it's a bit sad. You'd want to see him stay on and, you know, what's he going to go?
Yeah, I think it was a big shock to everyone. I think when the comments came out, you know, they were almost laughed off as if, like, why on earth would he leave for Everton? I think they finished about 11th last season. And like you said, that the atmosphere at that game is incredible, you know. It was all just can't wait for next season now with Koeman in charge, and then it all changed.
What's the Europa League been like?
I've really enjoyed it. I've managed to get to any of the away games, but I've been to home games so far. And, you know, I think it's a competition that a lot of teams, sort of similar stature to ourselves, should be looking to do. Whether it does have an effect on your league form or not, you know, we'll be able to look back at the end of the season and sort of say that. But I definitely want to do it again next season and the season after. It's something to enjoy rather than a hindrance on your season, I think.
Yeah, there's something nice about beating Inter Milan. It doesn't matter if they're a great team or not at the moment. You can always say we beat teams
look
like
back,
Inter Milan.
Look back in a few years and it'll just say we beat Inter Milan. So,
yeah, so is it Beersheba? Is that what they've called or you've got in your last game?
Yes, yeah, we've got them next week, Thursday next week.
So we're through, that'll be good. Good luck to you in that one. Always like to see English teams progress. Right, so back to the weekend. What are we going to have to do to pick up a result against you this weekend? Where is Southampton weak?
I think, you know, there's always, as there is with most teams, there's always a bit of weakness. You know, the defence have got a mistake in them. Fonte's not, I know he's ex-Palace, so you can know a bit about him, but he's been excellent since he joined us from yourselves. But he's not quite been in his same self this season. So maybe there's a bit of weakness there. And it depends who we put out at right back. If Martina gets a nod again, which I can't really see happening, there's a weakness there. But I'm always wary of going into, I know you're on a fairly poor run yourselves. I'm always wary of going into games like that because, you know, it's got to end at some time. And usually it seems like they all end against us. So, you know, I'm a bit wary that we could just slip up there.
Yeah, all football fans feel the same, I think. put a case in point against Swansea on the weekend. Oh, what's that? You haven't won since the opening game of the season. Here you go. Have 3 points in the most ridiculous circumstances you've ever seen. all right, so you're allowed to predict your team to win if you want. What do you think the score is going to be?
2-1 us, I think.
2-1. Generous. Yeah. You've got, you know, the likes of Jose Font in the middle there and Van Dijk. You're going to be all over us from corners, I think. You should be looking more towards the 3 or 4 range. And is it...
I never know.
Going on to Jose Font, just back to him for a second. I think it was the stat he's the only player ever to win the Johnson Paint Trophy and then the Euros. Is that right?
Yeah, he is. It's brilliant. It's remarkable. So,
good quiz question years later down the line. But anyway, look, Jack, thank you so much for joining us, mate. It's been really, really helpful. And good luck with the rest of the season, also with Shoot going on there as well, mate.
Thank you very much. Good luck to yourselves.
Cheers, pal. Take care.
Cheers, guys.
Homesdale Radio Preview Podcast, sponsored by fanduel.co.uk.
The next generation of fantasy football.
Right, it's prediction time. As always, we'll start with what we've had from the listeners via the lovely platform that is Twitter. @A_Lynch has gone Palace 0, Southampton 2. Austin will be all over our defence. Nick Palace H has gone 2-6 to Southampton. Maybe half of that if we're lucky. @CarlMSX has gone 1-2. Late goal by Austin. He'll goad the Homesdale. Full scale right will ensue. Pardew out and all sorts of mayhem. @Tellboy 174 dreads to think what could happen, but he thinks it's probably going to be 2-3. Mike Benz is struggling to see anything but a loss, 0-1 at best. Mike's personal record of watching Pardew games live is played 21, 1-3, drawn 5, lost 13. We will politely request if you could just stop coming to games, Mike. That would be great. At Worcester Park, with a W-U-S-T-A Park, 1-3, and you don't know what you're doing, ringing from the stands. And finally, Northie 001 has gone for 1-4 all day. Right, before I get your guys' predictions, I'm going to hit you with some stats. This will be the 67th league meeting between the two sides. We've only got 18 wins. I've discounted out the southern leagues and all of that in there. Only 18 wins, 14 draws and 34 losses. Our biggest win is the 4-1 from the opening day of 2007-08 season, which we will be talking about shortly on this podcast. Their biggest win is a 6-0 win in May 1971. Were you there, Nick?
Yes, I was.
Of course she was. We've only had one win against them in the last 9 league meetings, scoring just 3 goals and conceding 16. And for all of you out there hoping for a clean sheet, we've only ever kept 13 against them, which translates to 1 in every 5 games. So I can't really see that happening. Referee will be Paul Tierney. This is the first time that he's officiated a Premier League game for Crystal Palace. But he has reffed us once before, and we got smacked 5-1 by Manchester City. Right, predictions. Nick, earlier you was touching on saying you're going to predict us to go a couple of goals behind. So what's the rest of that prediction?
Well, the rest, if you listen to the theme throughout all those predictions from everybody else, I can't see us doing anything else. This is going to be the sort of game where I'm going to predict us to lose 2-0, but you never know. Knowing Pardew and a bit of luck, he may even sneak a win. But my prediction is we're going to lose 2-0.
Sneak a win. Do you think you can sneak a win, Albert?
A draw. I don't know anymore. We'll go 5-0 up and then we'll lose 6-3. That's how mental we are.
Hey?
Exactly. I don't know. I don't think we'll win. I think we'll get a draw. A 1-1 draw is the best we can hope for. Zeki Friars.
Oosh!
Dean Gordon-esque from 35 yards.
I want to see Damien Delaney back in because, do you know what? He might fuck up every now and then, but at least he fucking screams and shouts and, throws his body into it. And that's what we're lacking. Whether it's going to do any good, I ain't got a clue.
And he was less asleep on the bench than our defence were on Saturday.
Yeah, he got closer to Llorente than the defence.
Oh God, we're just ruined, aren't we? We're doomed.
I am well up for it on Saturday. It's going to
well
be
up for it. Okay, well, I don't think we've got any chance of winning, and I can see 3-1, 3-4-1 Southampton. I think we'll score because we just seem to like to do that. So I'll go for 3-1. 3-1 to Southampton with... Well, Christian Benteke doesn't score at Selhurst, does he? So we'll stick Delaney. Delaney will grab a goal. Come in and say to Pardew, what you've been leaving me out for, look what I can do. Right, it's time to move on to our classic match. We didn't put a vote out this week because, I had this guest lined up for the show and I wanted to inject a little joy into the end of the pod by remembering such a resounding win over Southampton. So after this snippet of commentary, we will be back with James Scowcroft.
Caught also in there is Scowcroft. Palace in front after half an hour and it's Jamie Scowcroft. Southampton haven't been able to prepare as they would have wished for the new season with Kenwyn Jones the latest casualty after he was hurt in training. Scowcroft gives chase and Jamie Scowcroft has got there. It's 2-0. Southampton conceding again almost from the restart. It's a massive clearance by Speroni. Bill Alkowski's in trouble and Jamie Scowcroft has completed his hat-trick. Kennedy over the free kick. On by Court. Here's Morrison. It's Clinton Morrison. And this is extraordinary. It's 4-1 now to Palace.
Right, so we are now joined by James Scowcroft. James, thank you for joining us, mate.
No problem.
Right, so you had a 15-year playing career. Let me know if I get anything wrong. You was at Ipswich, Leicester, Coventry, Orient and Palace.
Yeah.
Played 564 games and scored 100 goals.
Let me tell you something about Wikipedia, mate. You can go on Wikipedia and you can change it around and gloss it up and add a few appearances, goals, etc., etc., which several people do. So it's not always gospel Wikipedia.
No, I got this off the English National Football Archive. So I would hope that it's all right. 84 of those games you played for Palace and you scored 14 times. For all the geeks out there, you played 14% of your games at Palace and 14% of your goals were scored at Palace and 14.8% of your games. So you owe us 0.8 of a goal, mate.
I do apologise.
No. During your time at Palace, you scored one of the Goal of the Decade contenders between 2005 and 2015 with that ridiculous volley against Wolves. Would you say that's the best of your career?
probably one of three. Got a couple. That's certainly one of them that sticks out. It was a good season. I remember the season well. I remember the goal well. It's just one of those that you just hit it and it just comes off your sweet spot. And I think it went over Wayne Hennessy, I think.
Well, yeah, the Danny Butterfield hat trick was against Wayne Hennessy. Your goal, oh goodness, Wayne. Yeah. right. So the game that we've got you on to talk about is Saturday 11th of August, and the Palace faithful were off to St Mary's for opening day of 2007-08 Championship season. Southampton lost in the playoffs the previous season and were one of the favourites to earn promotion. But Palace showed the host that it would be, in fact, them who was pushing for it. So Peter Taylor was in charge at that point. What was the ambitions for the season going into this game?
The ambitions were sort of ambitions for any team in the Championship, really, to try and get into that top six. We had a squad that was capable. We had a squad that actually did do it that season. We'd had a sort of mediocre season the season before, and I think we'd had a very good pre-season, very positive pre-season. And I think we went into that game and nobody really sort of took us too seriously, and we were excellent that day, really good. And we beat a very, very good Southampton side, who I think had people like Grzegorz Radziak up front, Idiaco in midfield. They had some good players, some very, very good players, and they were heavily fancied that season. And it was, even throughout that season, it was a topsy-turvy season, but the second half was very good. That still possibly was one of our best performances and best results.
Yeah, certainly was. So we lined up with Julian Speroni in goal. We had Matt Lawrence, Tony Craig making his debut, Mark Hudson, Leon Colt, Ben Watson, Tom Saw, Stuart Green, Clinton Morrison, Mark Kennedy, and of course yourself. Are you still in contact with any of those guys?
Occasionally, very, very rarely. I spoke to Stuart Green, bump into Matt Lawrence every now and again. Ben Watson's still playing, Tom Shaws is still playing, Mark Hudson's still playing, Julian's still playing. I met Julian at his testimonial year, was it the back end of last season? Any one of them, they were good. Bunch of lads around. We had an excellent pre-season. I think we went to Sweden on tour for a week, and it sort of got us going, really, and gave us a lot of belief, really. And it's just a shame that result that day, we couldn't sort of kick on from there.
Yeah, so we 0-0 up into just around the half an hour mark, and I think it was a Ben Watson corner you headed in, wasn't it?
It was a Stuart Green corner.
Stuart Green. Oh, there you go.
No. It was one. We worked quite a lot on set pieces. Really good ball in. I think it was Chris Makin, who played with Ipswich for a few years. Mark there just managed to get in front of him. And in the Championship, usually the first goal is key. And I think that just from the opening half hour, they passed the ball really well, from what I can remember. It was a boiling hot day. And that was a crucial first goal. And that gave us a platform. I think I scored the second one a couple of minutes after that. Is that right?
It was instantly after. So kick-off, one pass forward. It's overhit, and I think it's Matt Lawrence just launches it over the top and you run onto it. Nice little tidy finish.
Yeah, just remember, it's just one of those that bounces and the sort of finish is made up for you. Just managed to lob it over the goalie and 2-0 up. And, it was a dream start. And from what I can remember, they pulled a goal back right on the stroke of half-time. Which sort of disappointing, really, because to sort of be 2-0 up and then going at 2-1, the game was still very tight.
Well, it didn't take long after half time, about 8 minutes, to re-establish a 2-goal lead. Julian Speroni just punts it down the field and nearly lobs the goalkeeper off the bounce. The goalkeeper just manages to scoop a handle in it, basically throws it straight into your head. Now, on looking back on the video, it makes it look very, very easy, but it couldn't have been easy to react that quickly to head it in.
No, I think Julian was never renowned for his kicking, but the goalie just totally misread it. And the worst thing he did was actually palm it up. They palmed it anywhere else, or it might have even gone wide, and he palmed it up. And I can remember just running back with the defender, and he just couldn't have palmed it any better for me. But I still sort of had to react, but naturally I reacted in the right way. And 3-1 up and a hat-trick, and it was just in front of the Palace, and Palace had excellent away support that day. I think they must have taken 3,500. I think you got a bigger allocation in the Championship, and Palace away support has always been very, very good. So, you know, that was one thing that stands out for me, how good our away support was that day.
So if the ball bounces over the goalkeeper and it's a choice of getting your hat-trick or letting Speroni score, which one do you choose?
There's only one answer there, really, and I'm sure Jules wouldn't mind it either. But it was just one of those, really. I think we worked on it all week, that they liked to play, and we were going to press them and put them under pressure and just unsettle them, really, and that's what we did. And in the end, I think we played some very good football in the second half and controlled the game. We had some very good footballers in our side, people like Ben Watson, Mark Kennedy, very technically very good players.
Yeah. So, yeah, then just 2 minutes later, Clinton Morrison added the fourth, and that would obviously end up 4-1 and a really, really good win. But it was a bit of a false dawn at the start, I guess, because we'd only win once more in the next 15 games, and that obviously led to the sacking of Taylor. What did Neil Warnock do a little bit different when he came in?
I think he just highly motivated a squad of good players. No, there was nothing special, nothing. I think he was just typical Neil Warnock, highly motivated, stamped his feet a little bit, and just got us going. And in that league, the difference between sort of winning 1 out of 15 and winning 7 or 8 out of 15 isn't a big, big difference, really. And there's not a lot of difference between being 6 from bottom and 6 from top. And I think he just motivated a team of good players. And we lost the first 3 or 4 out of Neil's first games.
Yeah, I thought we didn't win in his first 7. Yeah.
No, yeah. So it took us a long time, but then we got going. I think we had a very good Christmas, if I can remember. I remember going to his old club, Sheffield United. I think it's just before or just after. And we won 1-0, and that was a massive win for us. And then we just carried on right the way through to the end of the season, really. So I think we went from second bottom to finishing fifth.
Yeah, I mean, over the 15 games, we went from 23rd up until just after Warnock came in, all the way up to fifth by January, which is quite a remarkable turnaround, really.
That was. And as soon as you get on a roll, as soon as you get momentum in any team, any sort of division, you can see it with Palace at the moment. They need to just try and stop this run they're on and get some momentum going the other way. And when you can get that momentum going forward, you can just kick on and on and on and on, and everyone starts to believe in themselves.
Right, we're going to do a little James Scowcroft on James Scowcroft quiz to end. So it's just a few questions about your career. So yeah. How many penalties did you score in your career?
I'd say one.
Correct. It was against Crewe, in which was your other hat-trick, your other career hat-trick in that game. Who was your 100th career goal against, your last one? According to the English National Football Archive, of course.
Barnsley.
Yes, he's good at this, guys. 2-0.
2-0 to score.
2-0 in 2008. Do you remember it?
I do remember. I think it was in front of the Homestale.
It's the best place to score your last goal.
It was, yeah.
I'm
pretty certain it was, yeah.
Did you... A lot of players after, I think particularly Dougie Friedman, we talked to on this show before, and he was saying, looking back, he wished he enjoyed scoring goals more because he just took it for granted at the time. Is that something that you can relate to?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a lot of things you look back and think, maybe I could have got more out of that. I think so. It's sort of half your job, so and sometimes as a centre forward, it's more relief, really, because that's what you get judged on. I can see where he's coming from, definitely.
Right, and the last couple, how many times were you sent off in your career?
Four.
There you go. Yeah, twice for Ipswich against Grimsby and Middlesbrough. What were they throwing elbows around, or?
They were. The first one was a bit unlucky. 2 yellow cards. The second one against Middlesbrough. Luckily enough, I don't think it's on video because it's one of the worst sending-offs you'll ever see. And if I did it in this day and age, I'd be in serious big trouble. The second one was for Leicester against Tottenham live on Super Sunday. I remember that one quite well. Where
that was a mad game.
Yeah, where the right back, he was Argentina, rolled over about 15 times and got me sent off. And then the last one for Palace, I think, was a second yellow against Swansea at home.
Yeah, I think it was Burnley, the last one. The Spurs game, 4-4. That's a bit of 4-4. A barnstormer.
It was, yeah. I think they were 4-2 up, I think. And they got Jermaine Defoe scored in 5th minute of extra injury time to level, I think. I remember right.
Mm. Right, and finally, how many times in your career did you score against Palace?
Never had a good record scoring playing against Palace. I remember playing against them a lot for Ipswich. I never used to enjoy playing at Selhurst Park, and I don't think I ever won there. I'd actually say probably I never scored against Palace.
That's right, yeah, and that's why we love you, James. Scoring goals for us. You're on a plus 14 goal difference, so we like that.
Am I?
So that's interesting. You touch on playing at Selhurst there as an opposition player. What is it really that different from being a home player to an opposition player?
Yeah, it's totally. I love playing there for Palace. Really, really enjoyed it. But as an away player, I never enjoyed it. I don't. You know, Palace always gave you a tough game, whether it's in the Premier League or in the Championship. It was always, you know, it's a typical, you know, they get good support from the home style NBA. And whenever I'd just come up, they always had a strong, good, decent side. And you always just get caught in traffic going there. And I just feel that, you know, I know that eventually they're going to redevelop the stadium and build a, you know, big brand new stand. But I just hope it will take some of that kind of tradition away from the club that makes Palace so special. And I just sort of hope they never lose that, because I still see it today with some players go there, just don't enjoy playing there for whatever reason. It is, the tunnel's very tight. It's very old school, and there's a lot of new grounds that are soulless and everything. That's one thing you could never say about Selhurst Park. I remember playing a lot for Ipswich against Palace at Portman Road, and Palace just always bring good away support, always.
Yeah, it's a good one. Good one, Ipswich away. We enjoy that. And you know, everyone, a lot of people would call Selhurst Park a bit of a shithole, but, you know, it's our shithole and we love it.
No, it's got good character. No, not at all. It's got bundles of character, and that's the main thing. That's what you want. As a player, I love playing at Selhurst Park. I used to really enjoy it.
Okay, and finally, you're a big Man United fan, aren't you? We've got you in a couple of weeks. What are your thoughts on Man United season so far?
Man United season so far. Half my family come from Manchester, so that's why I'm boyhood sort of Man United fan. It's very, very topsy-turvy at the moment. Underachieving, a bit like Palace, really. I think Palace are underachieving with the strength of the squad they've got. I just see it being a draw. I just see that. A Wednesday night, I think Palace will raise a game. It'll be a big, big atmosphere, and I see it being maybe a 1-1 draw.
Okay, I think we'll take that. We will. Well, look, anyway, James,
probably
thank you.
Will take it as well. No problems, anytime.
Thank you so much, mate, and have a good evening.
You too. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, pal. Bye.
Bye.
Right, that's almost your lot for this week. Thanks to James Scowcroft and Jack Rosser for joining us. Thanks also go to our producer Tav and Hambo for helping out on the producing side this week. I say help, he just pressed play and record a couple of times, I think, didn't he, guys? That was about it.
Yeah, that's all he did.
On his old tape deck.
On his old tape deck.
8-track.
Obviously, I've got to thank my panellists. First, thank you, Mr. Curley, for joining us.
You are more than welcome.
I think you're joining me next week as well, actually. I think I've got you on.
Really?
And yeah.
I used up all my stuff this week, so.
Yeah, oh dear. Oh. Mm. Well, don't spoil it now, but we've got a very special guest next week, so a good one to look out for. And finally, thank you to, well, it is you, yes, obviously. Thank you to Mr. Nick Philpotts for joining as well.
Terence, it's always my pleasure.
Mate, have a great time in India.
Thank you, I will.
Don't do anything I wouldn't do.
You know I won't.
Leave all those little sorts alone.
God.
Right, and listeners, remember to tune in to the review show on Sunday night of the Southampton game. If listening live interferes too much with your Sunday night shenanigans, the podcast version of the show will be available shortly after it finishes. You can ensure that you never miss another episode of Hull Radio ever again by subscribing by heading to hullradio.net/subscribe. If you want to contact specifically this show, you can email us on previewpodcast@hullradio.net. The votes for our classic match against Hull, to be remembered on next week's show, will go up from Tuesday morning on Twitter, and you will find that at Hull Radio on that social media platform. We will, of course, be back in your ears next Thursday for the build-up to the Hull game. Until then, up the Palace.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.